My parents met both working in the comic book industry. In fact, their first date was even at San Diego Comic-Con. So for the majority of my life, stories from Marvel and DC were as normal as fairy tales. When Avengers 1, the movie, came out, I was around 6 years old. I watched it in the theaters with my family, and during that one funny scene when the Hulk punches Thor, the entire theater started laughing. It was admittedly a pretty funny scene. But little six-year-old me wasn't happy about that, the characters I'd grown up with getting thrown around. So I stood up, turned around to better face the audience, and screamed in my little kid voice, "That's not funny!" Of course, the audience had another laugh while my family was absolutely losing it and probably couldn't focus on the rest of the movie because of how hard they were laughing at me. Safe to say, Thor was my favorite superhero growing up. However, now that I have gotten to know more comics and universes, my tastes in characters have expanded, which is why I'm going to be talking about some of them today. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is Jackie On Cool Superheroes and What Makes Them Cool. Just a little disclosure, I focus a bit more on DC than Marvel since I like the comics for DC a bit more and I know more about them. So don't come for me if you don't see your favorite character being represented or if you see my kind of pure DC focus for this episode. I also consulted my dad on this as the resident comic expert in my household, so I wanted to just give him some credit for talking through some of my picks with me and the reasons why I like them. And finally, with that, there will be some spoilers for pretty much all the characters I mentioned, so if you are on a specific comic run, I'd advise to listen to this later. But with that being said, let's get into some cool characters. First is Deadman. My favorite superhero is Deadman. He was created by Arnold Drake, who's the guy behind the Doom Patrol and Guardians of the Galaxy. He's like a weird smorgasbord of Hindu belief and Bostonian sensibilities. Basically, Deadman was the code name of circus trapeze performer Boston Brand, since he wore white corpse makeup when he performed. But during one of his shows, he's murdered by someone only known as the Hook. The Hindu god Ramakrishna, also created by Arnold Drake, gives him the ability to live as a spirit and possess other people's bodies to bring his murderer to justice. Ramakrishna is the goddess of balance and karma in the entirety of the DC universe, so that's kind of the justification as to why she would want him to, you know, seek justice for his murder. She's usually depicted as a blue woman or just a face in Deadman's consciousness and looks after the city Nanda Parbat, which is where a lot of stuff goes down throughout the DC universe, so it's kind of a cool connection to make. Regardless, Deadman has such a personality and a sense of justice that goes beyond balance, and it's interesting seeing how he can clash with the ideas of Ramakrishna. But his story is basically about him finding justice for himself and others, all while no one knows he exists because he can't actually be seen. The only time people know of his existence is when their favorite sidekick all of a sudden starts speaking in a weird accent and they're like, okay, Deadman's come. Not actually. But, of course, Batman does learn of his existence, and they work together a few times. I enjoy their banter a lot, especially there was one time Deadman possessed Superman's body to warn the Justice League of incoming danger, and that's mostly what he uses his abilities for, to warn people of upcoming issues. Interestingly, he was also part of Justice League Dark, which other members included Zatanna, John Constantine, Swamp Thing, and Frankenstein. Later on, some additions include Ragman and Dr. Fate, which, if you don't know who any of those characters are, they're basically just cool occult characters, which is what Justice League Dark is all about. The lesser known, more sorcerer side of the extended DC universe. Although Dr. Fate is definitely well known, he's considered one of the greatest sorcerers and is really more of a consultant. Since he derives his powers from the Lord of Order, Nabu, he only really gets involved in stuff that is universe altering or goes up against some great evil. He's another cool character, though, I will admit. But Deadman is definitely my favorite, and I think he's not often thought of as the top of anyone's list. And I don't really know why I like him so much. I just think his sense of humor and his sensibilities are interesting. And I think especially with an ability like his, where he has powers and he uses them and he's cool and interesting, but he doesn't actually do that much. You know, he's not the one who's acting a lot of the time. He's mostly like an informant and investigator because he can go places other people can't. And I kind of appreciate him for that. And also appreciate how he has to communicate with other people without necessarily, you know, taking over their bodies in a way that might be harmful to them. It's an interesting, like, moral issue that he has as someone who can never be seen by anyone, but also needs vengeance for his murder. So I like him a lot. But let's get to the number two hero on my list, which is Tim Drake's Robin or Red Robin. Now, this may be controversial, but I think Tim Drake's Robin, later going by the moniker Red Robin, is the best of what Robin as a hero has to offer. This is referring to Batman's sidekick, by the way. Yes, Dick Grayson is the original one and the entire reason why Robin exists, and for that, he's the de facto best. And yes, there's Jason Todd, who occupies the anti-hero space. And yes, no one talks about the other countless Robins who have existed either in alternate universes or some spin-offs. And yes, there's Damian Wayne, but like, he's got some work to do before he can even be considered up there in the leagues with everyone else. No, what makes Tim Drake the best Robin is that Robin was always meant to be the counterpart to Batman. Where Batman was about vengeance and rage, Robin symbolizes hope and renewal. Robins as a bird are a sign of spring. The thing that's remarkable about Tim Drake is that after Jason Todd died and Bruce Wayne became horribly unstable, almost killing criminals on the street, it was him who reined him in. Dick Grayson was unwilling to do it because of some understandable hang-ups with the man, but Tim Drake as a teenager literally became the controller for a grown vigilante. And yeah, that's not healthy behavior, but it does show how much Tim Drake was able to turn Batman into something positive again and help him get back on his feet, be his counterpart in the way he needed to be. Okay, besides that, Tim Drake is a genius. He learned the identities of the entire Bat family when he was 8 because of, well, some drama. He rivals Batman as a detective and is a great fighter. In fact, he's such a force to be reckoned with that Ra's al Ghul wanted him as an heir, which is also kind of creepy. But that's some high praise from a creepy old man, you know? I'd take it. I wouldn't, actually. I'm joking. But all that aside, I think the reason I really love Tim Drake comes down to the arc where Batman went missing / dead in the time stream. This is when Dick Grayson becomes Batman, gives Robin to Damian Wayne, and basically ousts Tim Drake as being crazy for believing Bruce Wayne is still alive. And of course, he can't really turn to anyone else in the family because they also think he's crazy or tried to kill him multiple times, which I'm looking at you, Jason Todd / Red Hood. But does Tim Drake run away and cry? No. He doesn't care that the rest of his family doesn't believe in him and goes to prove himself correct. Eventually, after joining a pack of assassins and blowing up some League of Assassin bases, he manages to bring Bruce Wayne back. Is the Bat family grateful to him? Nope. But he carries on, becoming the CEO of Wayne Industries, and overall kills it. Now, what's the story here? Is it that no one will ever be grateful no matter how much effort you give them? Maybe, but I think it shows how much fortitude Tim Drake has. He is doubted and betrayed, but that doesn't stop him. He's a genius and never ends his search for justice. And while many have tried to kill him, he's never really been killed. And you can take that a lot of other Robins who have died and come back to life. He's my favorite little cockroach. One thing that I don't like is the name Red Robin, though. It's a restaurant, it's a dumb name. It wasn't even original to Tim Drake. Who decided that he should take up that moniker? There's like thousands of other birds, like red birds out there that you can pick and be angsty about. But Red Robin is an awful, awful name. But that's beside the point. Tim Drake, in his amazingness, makes up for it. So I think I give it a pass. It's okay. But I'm going to move on now to the third hero on my list, which is The Question. The Question was created by Steve Ditko, modeled off his character Mr. A, which reflected his personal beliefs and objectivity. However, The Question was more of a watered-down version, not quite as cookie-cutter objective, sees the world in black and white. The Question's whole deal is that he's a detective without a face. He wears something called pseudoderm, which basically just makes his face look like a wall of flesh. Also, he has a special yellow gas that can change his hair color and clothing for more disguise options. But the whole premise for his backstory is that pseudoderm could be dangerous on open wounds and the science for it was shut down, but one of the scientists who worked on it, Dr. Twain, decided to start illegally selling it, and his partner, Aristotle Roeder, had Vic Sage, The Question, bring him down. Vic Sage being the first name for The Question when he was just a journalist, of course, he wore pseudoderm to do it because while it wasn't scientifically approved, it worked on him. And yes, this is a very complicated little backstory. I don't really fully understand it, but most of the time I like a hero, it's not because of their backstory, it's about their character traits and kind of what they bring to the picture. And I think The Question brings a lot of interesting things. And those interesting things being that he has a pretty big mysterious aura around him, and he's a little bit more brutal. Like, he's willing to do some of the dirty grunt work. I know that sounds strange, but he has a Batman tinge of no-nonsense that I appreciate, and is not always super strict to that same moral precipice that Batman is rested on. Although some things have changed about him down the line, like his name is now Charles Victor Szasz instead of Vic Sage, which I don't understand personally, but doesn't matter much. He's also kind of sometimes had supernatural powers like teleportation, and then in like other universes just been an investigative journalist. The nature of comics and storytelling is that you have to have multiple universes because here and there different authors contribute different storylines, and then at the end of the day you're just stuck with three different characters and you have to figure out a way to bring them together. So it's okay if there's some weird hodgepodges now and then, but to be transparent, a lot of what I know of the question is from the Justice League Unlimited series I watched as a kid. I remember him basically being a conspiracy theorist who didn't trust anything because he was a bit too perceptive about everything, and I thought that was fresh coming from a world where so many heroes are overly optimistic. Now I've started reading more stories like The Watchmen, where you get a realistic image of what heroism might look like in another world, but this was kind of my first introduction to, oh yeah, maybe we're not all rainbows and sunshines, because you had like Superman and Batman at two ends of the spectrum, where you either had, oh my god, we have so much hope for the world, it can do no wrong, or oh my goodness, look how dark and horrible the world is. And I felt like The Question was able to put those two together and almost come to a realistic viewpoint on the world in a broader way, at least in the Justice League Unlimited series. And so that was my first real exposure to that, and I really appreciated it, which is why I think I've kind of always had a fondness for The Question. But let's move over to the fourth, which is two people, Dr. Occult and John Constantine. Personally, I feel like these two are both good side or supporting characters, not necessarily main spotlight characters. My dad is the one who actually told me about Dr. Occult. He was the precursor to Superman, created by the same people, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. He can do anything you might associate with the occult, being taught after he was kidnapped to be a human sacrifice. So if you can think of anything that seems occulty in your opinion, he can do it. And I think that's pretty cool. Also, funnily enough, he originally was donned in blue and red with like the classic hero underwear and cape, and almost immediately his design was changed to have more of like a trench coat detective look. But he probably inspired almost all the heroes out there with the abilities and superhero look and then the later detective work. So that alone makes him pretty cool, even if he's pretty obscure in current comic runs. I feel like Constantine, who was inspired by him, as so many were, is the successor for his legacy. John Constantine, or Hellblazer, is another sorcerer dealing with the occult, but is a bit more of a jaded anti-hero con man type. He's got a tragic backstory, fit with parental issues, but had powerful sorcerer ancestors which led him to experiment with magic and eventually fall into heroism. He was initially introduced as Swamp Thing's friend and a side character before getting his own series. He fights demons and has a complicated relationship with occult forces, which does make for some interesting storytelling. I am a fan of that. I think he's pretty cool, other than his wife having like a 33-year-old age gap with him, and then dating his nephew when he kind of didn't really, but maybe actually did die. That's the issue with these occult types, is they die and get possessed by demons and then become demons and then, oh my god, actually that was a demon disguised as me, that's not really me, and then die and then revive again. It gets very complicated, so whatever. But I like him because he's able to befriend a force like the Swamp Thing, because his abilities and the narratives that stem from it make him a bit more of a darker, more interesting character, but is still able to come out as a hero at the end of the day. Characters like these who toe the line of morality and get dealt a bad deal but learn to live with it are quite fascinating to me, and that's kind of the thread you'll probably see throughout all of these characters, is that, you know, they haven't had the best lives, and I don't think many heroes have, but yet they still kind of put their best foot forward. Which brings me to number 5, which is actually a group, the Birds of Prey. The Birds of Prey is a superhero team-up between Barbara Gordon, post-Joker, putting her in a wheelchair, so now she has the moniker Oracle instead of Batgirl, and Black Canary. It was initially just them, but has since expanded to include a lot of heroines, with Huntress taking over a lead role after a while. It operates mostly out of Gotham, and even some sort of villains like Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy have been known to join the team. sometimes it feels like, oh, hey, we have a girls' club. Let's add some more women to it. So the storyline can be a bit out of place. With Gotham-based heroes, it makes perfect sense. But when it starts expanding out to even Big Barda, it gives me a little bit of pause. However, the reason I enjoy this team in the first place is because I love how Oracle and Black Canary interact with each other, each kind of fulfilling a different role for each other. Canary being Oracle's legs, and Oracle being Canary's eyes. Huntress being added develops her own storyline to be less of a loner and more supported. Plus, I feel like the bird theme remains pretty strong between those three. So, maybe not the best team out there. I think the name is cool and there are a lot of interesting missions the team goes on, supporting each other as friends and co-workers, which is important in a place like Gotham. There's also some rehab aspects, what with Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn occasionally joining in. So I just think this team up is cool overall. I don't know if I have a particular reason why, you know, they're the coolest, but I think it's a bit unorthodox compared to what you see in most team ups. And I like the origins of it more than I'd say how it is now. But before I close out, I do want to give some honorable mentions of heroes that could have made it on this list, but didn't for one reason or another. First is Matter Eater Lad. Exactly as it sounds like, he can eat pretty much anything and uses that energy to propel himself, so he's also got some super speed. I just like the fact that he can eat anything and that being his shtick. Like, that's it. That's all he can do. He could just eat stuff, and I love that for him. He is from the Legion of Superheroes, which is a team in the 31st century, so he's from some far-off alien planet where eating everything is the norm, which is fine. I just sometimes grow tired of comic writers needing new characters and drafting up aliens only for them to turn out identical to humans. There's just too many of them. I mean, look at Green Lantern. There's thousands of non-humanoid aliens introduced by those comics, and yet most of the time, those species are never brought up again. They're just out there in the universe. So I feel like if Matter Eater Lad wasn't a lad, he would be more interesting. But I do enjoy him as he is. Next honorable mention is Crimson Avenger. Originally, he's a superhero that was created even before Batman, featured in Detective Comics number 20. Basically, he's just another guy fighting crime. But where it gets interesting is in the third Crimson Avenger, who's now a woman, was a law student and uses the guns of the original Crimson Avenger to enact vengeance after a guilty man was set free. Basically, these guns end up being cursed, and she's cursed to kill people who took innocent lives. A little grim, a little judge, jury, and executioner. But what I find fascinating is how this idea of innocence only pertains to you being responsible. Like, if you kill someone, obviously bye-bye. But if you get that person on death penalty, you might have led to their death so long as they are guilty for what they're on death penalty for, you're off the hook. So if they committed a crime and you get them sent to jail and on death penalty, you're okay. I kind of like things like this that can have loopholes and toe the line. As I mentioned, this whole like moral aspect makes me intrigued as a reader, and so I enjoy this character. Next honorable mention is Hawk and Dove. Not sure why, but I always found Hawk and Dove to be interesting characters. I preferred the original duo with Hank and Dawn, D-O-N, instead of after Dawn's death when he was replaced with female Dawn, D-A-W-N. I always found that quite lazy. Like, why we have the same exact name? I know it's pronounced different, but it's creating confusion. But basically, they originally gained their powers from Lords of Order and Chaos, meant to balance each other out between Hawk's aggression and Dove's calm nature. They quite literally complement each other perfectly. I think part of the reason having a female Dove is weird to me is it feels like the classic angry man with only a woman able to control him because she's peace and he's war. And I don't really like that trope or the way it's perpetuated. I do think it gets a little better when Hank is gone and replaced by Holly, which is Dawn, D-A-W-N, is her sister. I feel like balance is finally reached again because now we have true, you know, same gender, no issues about war and peace and weird stereotypes. But it gets complex because Holly dies and Hank comes back and then Deadman, my favorite character, gets involved and that's where I call it quits. That's where it gets too much for me. I kind of like the original days where it's just Hawk and Dove doing stuff before it gets too needlessly complicated. And with that, I'm going to move on to the last honorable mention, which is the Metal Men. This is another superhero group made up of a bunch of robots created by some super genius. There's gold, lead, platinum, silver, tin, and mercury. Each one of them has superpowers based on their metal's properties, and honestly, I'm a sucker for things like that. I love it when a hero has a thing, like a group made up of metals, with powers that reflect those abilities. I feel like it's genius. I don't know why, but those kinds of things always get me excited, just because it's like the patterns fall perfectly in place. So I've been a fan of the Metal Men, just based on that. I don't know very much about them. I just like the fact that they're all metals, and their abilities are based on those metals. Just genius, in my opinion. But otherwise, that is all I have for today. I appreciate you tuning into this episode of Jackie On, and I hope I got you even a little more interested in superheroes beyond the basic ones everyone knows. I'll see you in the next episode.